Welcome to the Wellness Creator Podcast, where we delve into the business side of online wellness, sharing stories, strategies, and inspiration from people like you who are building meaningful income streams on the internet. If you're in the business of helping people to live healthier, happier lives, this podcast is for you. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get notified each time we release a new episode. Welcome, Hannah, to the Wellness Creator Podcast. I'm so happy to talk with you today.
I'm thrilled to talk with you, Jenny. Like, this is just, it's been a highlight that I'm going to be doing this. So thank you so much for having me on.
Yes. So Hannah, when I decided to start this podcast at the end of last year, there was a very clear short list of clients and folks I wanted to make sure that we brought on, and you were at the top of that list. Your story is so interesting and inspiring. Why don't we just start there? Why don't we start with, who is Hannah? How did you get into the wellness business world? When did you become an entrepreneur? How did any of this even happen?
Yeah. Okay. So I've been dancing my entire life. I started as a little kid and said, hey, this is my childhood dream. And I unwaveringly went that path. So I ended up being a professional dancer. There's some steps that happened between that, but ended up dancing for like 15 years, had an international career with that, had a couple of degrees, did some education in fitness and Pilates and yoga and all sorts of different things. And I came to the end of my career and I had a pretty devastating hip injury. At that point, I decided I know what I want to do next. Like, I knew that teaching was going to be part of my life and coaching was going to be part of my life forever. And I used that hip injury to be a springboard into starting my career. So I, within a year of stopping my dance career, I learned German and started a studio in a foreign country in Germany. And that's what I did. I took it, which was kind of bonkers, but it fit me. Like, no one believed me at that point, but I said, I'm going to do it. And it happened. Yeah.
Okay. So we have to back up just a little bit here, because I've always really wondered at how you even ended up in Germany. So my guess is your career had taken you to dance in Germany, in Europe. Okay. Yes. So what kind of dancing were you doing?
Good question. So I was trained in ballet, and then there's contemporary dances, which is where I was more interested in. So if anyone's familiar with that world, I got to dance with all of the big names, or do the choreography of the big names of like Matt Zeck and Nacho Duato and Crystal Pike. Like, there's a sort of like a bunch of different choreographers that make that realm of dance really interesting. So I got to dance all those. And my end station was in Germany. And that's where I met my now husband. We were dancing together. It was one of those like very Hollywood meet, keep it a secret. Oh, and that's why I stayed.
So, okay. So this is a beautiful start of a memoir here. And then did you know, I guess you sort of had built your educational background around eventually going into some sort of, you know, like wellness or coaching, as you mentioned. Did you kind of know that you would be opening a studio? Was that kind of the clear path for you at that stage of your life? Like, knowing once your professional dancing career ended?
That is a really good question. Yes, I knew that I wanted to teach, and I had been, next to my career, my performing career, I had been doing like freelance teaching here and there and checking out different models of studios throughout the world. So I got a really great sort of glimpse into how different types of structures work. That being said, I never expected a studio in Germany. I really didn't expect to be doing it in a different language. And as I was like traveling around and looking at these different business structures, I wasn't really analyzing it from a business side of view. I was looking at it like, how are these people teaching? What is that experience for the member? All that kind of thing. So when I started my business, I was just completely flying by the seat of my pants. Like, really, I don't recommend people to do this, but I took everything out of I had 10,000 euros and put that all into the business. And I started my business with $10,000 and nothing else, no business education, no nothing, just knowing that what I do is my passion. Teaching is my passion. Getting people to move is my passion. And that I am a determined person. That was also my belief about myself. And that with enough patience, I can learn anything. So I took those tools and I started a business. And thankfully, it worked out. Again, I don't recommend everyone to do it like that. But it was a good learning experience, growth experience, definitely.
Yeah. So first of all, that's pretty incredible. So just so that I am fully sharing the story, you didn't get a business loan. No one helped to fund the creation of your studio. You took your life savings essentially, or some portion of it. And
that was it.
Just bet in on yourself, like all in. Okay. Okay. And so was your now husband, was Christian your business partner at that time, or did you do this completely on your own?
I did everything completely on my own. He was still dancing at that point, actually, because I was out earlier because of the injury. And he thought I was absolutely bonkers. Actually, everyone around me thought I was bonkers. The only people that really had an inkling of what this was going to become is my parents. And they were like, oh yeah. Because once I said, this is what I'm doing, they're like, oh yeah, it's fine. We believe you, you'll get it done. But yeah, so then he joined in. Well, I want to say 2 years later, after I had been in the studio, and it was out of a need because I had grown so fast that I was teaching 10 hours a day. Also, not anything that I recommend for anyone, but I couldn't keep up with the people that were coming into my little space at that point. And then he joined me, which was amazing. We had already been working together before, so that transition was really easy into the studio space after the dance studio.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. I know a couple of other like sort of similar stories of dancers falling in love and then go riding off into the sunset and building a life together. And the fact that you did this in a foreign country, it's hard enough to start a business, especially without any business experience, especially following on, like you'd been your whole life in this one career, and being a dancer, I imagine was, you know, such a singular focus to like have to pivot to thinking about becoming a professional teacher and business owner. And it's a beautiful story and it should be incredibly inspiring to everyone listening. What I want to know is sort of like you had these 2 years, you obviously grew really fast from the beginning. When in that journey did you start to think of yourself as an entrepreneur?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I would say that I was starting to think of myself as like a business owner. And then it became a feeling of an entrepreneur a little bit later. Once I saw that it was successful, once my tax attorney, we had finished up our taxes and he said, obviously this is a translation, but he said, Mrs. Teutcher, I have to say congratulations. I never thought that you could be this successful. And that's when I pat myself on the back and I said, okay, here we go. Like this is, I'm in it now. And that's, I think, where my mindset changed. It's a little bit funny that it came from an outside source, but it was like that little check mark that I needed, like, oh yeah, I could do this. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's actually not that uncommon, especially for women to sort of see that as coming from an external space. I mean, so many other wellness professionals that I talk to, who many of whom have very real businesses. I know because, you know, we run a platform that they use to manage those businesses in some capacity. Many, many folks in this industry still don't think of themselves really as entrepreneurs, or they bristle even at the idea of being business owners. And that's like a whole other conversation. But I do think, and I'm just going to insert this little piece in here, this lesson, I do think that being able to identify that way becomes critical to the success that we ultimately end up being able to have. Like there's a growth ceiling, I think, that happens if you cannot accept that part of your identity.
I totally agree, Jenny, because once I started to really lean into that identity, I made better decisions altogether. I took myself seriously. Yeah. So I started to seek out growth opportunities, the things that I didn't really understand or feel comfortable with it, then I started to learn in those areas where before it was like, oh yeah, I do this thing really well of teaching, but it just wasn't broad enough to hold what I had become. So I totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if that's the only identity that you have is as a teacher and a wellness teacher or coach or whatever, once your business gets, you know, more than, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000, the problems that come from ignoring the other elements of your business will quickly take over your life and your ability to do that teaching. So, you know, I've been following and watching your journey for at least the last few years. And it's been noticeable to me that you take your job seriously as a business owner, in addition to your job as a teacher seriously. Like, you can tell when someone is kind of honoring that part of their work. What advice would you have for someone who maybe isn't quite there yet, mentally and emotionally, that maybe is still struggling to see themselves that way? I guess, what would you say to them? Because you have, you know, these decades in this world as a dancer, and you obviously you had that identity and it was so strong for you, I imagine. So like, what would you recommend that someone does? Is like reading a book or joining a community, or what would you recommend?
I think I'm going to give you a couple-fold answer on this one. I think that we need to give ourselves a little bit of grace in there. I think that learning curve can be hard, but everything, like I said before, everything is learnable. So if we give ourselves the grace to make mistakes, the making of the mistakes is where we're going to learn the most. So I think a lot of the times people are afraid of making this mistakes because they're expecting to get everything right from the very beginning, but that's just impossible. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Yeah, so, yeah, totally.
You know, and I think some of the greatest things I've done have been making those big mistakes and then saying, okay, what have I learned from that? And that goes along with my next thing is finding coaches and mentors that will help you see a different perspective. Because we all have our little perspective of who we are. And if you find a great coach or a mentor, they will see bigger. They're going to see you in an elevated way, like your future self. And so I think that would be my other piece of advice there is to seek out that person that believes in you or that program that believes in you.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think it's certainly a way to fast track your growth and your evolution as a business owner, because you obviously can make fewer mistakes because you can learn from someone else's. So you don't have to spend the time making them yourselves. Okay. So let's just rewind. You're 2 years into your studio. You're an American in Germany. Your husband has now just joined you in the business because you're growing so fast. What does that next phase of your business journey look like?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were some painful growing curves there. You know, there was a lot of learning softwares and learning how to do things. And we expanded several times during that space. So I feel most comfortable when I make money and I turn that around and I invest it back into my business. That's where my happy spot is. I know that there's sometimes other people who would say take a loan and that's not bad, but what I've consistently done, and maybe this is a slower, more comfortable growth for me, is that I take it and then I invest it back. And that meant for us expanding 1, 2, 3. We're on our fourth sort of expansion here in this iteration of the studio. So of my studio space, maybe that would even include 5 expansions because there is a big online expansion in there too. Yeah. So I don't know if that really answered your question, Jenny.
Yeah. So I guess I'm sure people are going to be curious, you know, as you're growing, that path can go in different directions, right? So you can choose to open another location. You can choose to go online. You can choose to potentially franchise out something that's growing very quickly. So it sounds like your response initially was just to physically expand your existing space.
Right. I basically keep on taking over rooms in this building that I am. So I have a great relationship with the landlord. So I went a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, took a couple rooms. Then I was on this one floor and then we went further that way. I have not yet franchised or looked at a different location, but that is definitely on the prospect next.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I want to have these conversations on this podcast, because there are other folks who are in kind of a similar situation, obviously not the dancing in Germany part, yeah. but who reach a level of success, which is amazing. The wellness world is a very like profitable industry to be in if you can figure out what you're doing from a business standpoint. And I think that that's a key question that happens to everyone who has a brick and mortar operation is like, where does that growth, how does that growth take place? And what we've seen from my perspective and why I built what I built was so that growth could at least much of it happen on the internet versus building out and expanding, because so often when you open a second or third location, right? Like those are in many ways like a whole separate business with different risk profiles and potential legal issues. And it's just, it's really expensive and risky. And so it's not always the wrong decision. You know, we've seen examples of it work really well, but that's a key question, I think, for folks to consider when they're at a growth inflection with their brick and mortar.
Absolutely. So like I said, we are on the conservative side of things. What we're doing now is we're really looking at how maximizing our space right now, our physical space, because I'm now at my perfect size of brick and mortar space. But at the same time, we've built an incredible online platform with you guys. Like our online studio has been it's so interesting because I'm able to give even more through that platform in the online space than I'd be able to do here in the studio in the physical space. There's like unlimited growth going up with the people that we could touch and affect and really motivate to move more. So that's a really exciting place. So before we open any other place, we're going to maximize all of our other avenues. So because I totally agree that there is opening another location is another beast, and those operations and those systems have to be down pat before anyone should ever think about opening a second spot.
Yeah, I think there's an art to knowing where that next location should be and what kind of lease requirements you get into. I mean, when you see people doing it well, it's really kind of a beautiful thing, but it's very, very easy to get that wrong. Yeah. So let's talk about the online side of things, Hannah, since you mentioned it. Tell me about what you've built. What does your kind of online suite of offerings look like for your business?
We have sort of two different branches of our online business. One is that one services our studio. So we have like a typical membership, not very similar to what our studio offering is. So there's live stream classes, we have an on-demand library and all that. And what I think is interesting about, first, it was just an answer to the times. It was an emergency situation at that point. But what it has become now is much more flexible and precise. And people are able to really, from our students, really to be able to get in there and answer what their needs are. And I think that's a beautiful thing because, you know, like if you're just going into a studio space, you're at sort of the whim of the instructor. If you wanted to stretch that day and then the instructor says, okay, we're doing planks for 30 minutes, you know, you're not going to get exactly what you need. And so I think that the online studio space that we've created answers that sort of, yeah, like a place of precision. I want to do 10 minutes of stretching today, only hamstrings. Great. We got something for you. So there's that aspect of the online studio that we've built out. And then the other one is called Train the Trainers, which is a continuing education for people that have gone through a teacher training program, such as yoga or Pilates or whatever it is, and feel like they are not yet at the place to feel comfortable in their most authentic teaching voice. And what we do is take evidence-based material plus art and ethics and philosophy and help those teachers teach better.
I love what you're doing. So let's answer the question, because I know people are going to be wondering. So your the part of your online business that's in, like, attached to your brick and mortar studio, mm-hmm. it's primarily serving that group of clients, but your trainer focused offering, those are potentially strangers that are finding you. So where are you getting the leads for that offering?
So it's so interesting. We have people from Iceland and Australia and throughout Europe and North America. It's been super interesting that they have come from Instagram. We're very, very active on Instagram. And we've learned through your programs how to cultivate an audience from there onto an email list and nurture them and go from there into the business. So it's been a really interesting process. That's, you know, all of those skills I've learned through your programs, but it's mostly through Instagram, I would say.
That's great to hear. Can you share, I guess, trend-wise, if that's changing for you at all? I think one of the things that we're noticing for some folks is that Instagram is getting to be like a quieter channel for them or a harder channel for them to get leads unless they're paying for Facebook ads. How has kind of that lead funnel into that offering changed over time?
For us, it's still going strong.
That's great to hear. That's excellent. Yeah.
So yeah. We are still gathering people onto our email list, and yeah, that hasn't died down at all. I do have to say that we are also creating different types of digital content that we weren't doing before. So I don't know if that's also supporting what we're doing on Instagram. So now I also have a podcast, and that people are also discovering us from there, or it's nurturing the people that have already know us from Instagram. And I think that's also helping.
Yeah, that's great. Can you just share with folks, what kind of content are you putting on Instagram? Is it mostly reels at this point? And how frequently are you posting?
So we also, I should back this up by saying Christian, my husband, and we have a little bit different way of going. He is probably the most determined person you will ever meet in your life. So very stubborn German. So he is on there literally every single day with a reel or a carousel. That's mostly what he does. We don't do any lives. So he is on there with a movement related tip or, you know, showing our brand of creativity. He's so stubborn. I can't believe that he could do that daily. that's that. I am not as frequently on there. And when I'm posting, then it's taking probably a reel occasionally with my dog. And more teaching tips. So I would probably just do more like a picture and really micro blog on there, or take some audio content from my podcast and put it on there. I try to get in there a few times a week.
So why don't you just share with our listeners how many followers you have on that platform currently?
I think Christian's probably about at 130,000. And yeah. I'm probably in the 30s.
Yeah. I think that's super helpful context for the conversation. I mean, it just goes to show if you're consistent and you're showing up and doing what it is that you're good at. So obviously just the fact that you both have such different styles, you and Christian, and that you're leaning into the parts of it that you feel are more natural for you, or you feel, you know, interested and confident in doing like that, yeah. I think shines through for people. So for those of you listening to Hannah's story, like this is not a casual business endeavor. I hope that's become clear at this point in the interview. Like, this is a very intentional, very focused effort to build a brand and a business, both a brick and mortar and online. And I think that that's why you're seeing the level of success that you are. But at the same time, you're doing it your way, right? So I think that it's available to everyone. You don't have to follow a specific formula to do it. You should do it in a way that's natural to you. And that's what, Hannah, you've exemplified, which is why I think this is so helpful for people to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I can only show up in the way that feels most comfortable for me. And so we're, you know, if anyone ever does discover us from here, we are kind of the antithesis of like what's happening in our industry. Like, I don't put on any makeup. Like, it's if I'm in my sweats and I want to show something because I think it might be useful, then I'm going to put that on. Chris has the most ridiculous socks ever. That's a whole nother story. So he's going to, you know, he's just wearing whatever he's wearing and showing up and knowing that the value of the content that we're creating, if we're feeling, is what people are after and our authentic selves. I'm not going to be one that puts on a full face to go out there.
Yeah.
But if that's also, like you're saying, Jenny, it's like, if that's what makes you feel good and comfortable, do it for you, whatever that is, then awesome. Do that, but don't do it just for the gram.
No. And I mean, I think that chasing trends, like maybe you can get a little juice sometimes, but you got to do something that you can commit to for years and years of your life. Right. So I personally would not want to chase trends for years and years at a time. Like that sounds like the most emotionally exhausting thing in the world, but you can lean into something that you like doing. And whether it's trendy or not, you can do that and show up every day for years and years. And that's the way to build a business.
Yes. But I think, Jenny, like also what you're saying is that we are very intentional about everything that we do, how we're showing up there and what we believe people need and want from us. Mm-hmm. So on the platforms, it's not just for show. It's really like you said, we're really intentional. And then also the podcast, when I'm blogging, when all of those things are leading into what my vision is for the future.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So I'm just thinking about where you started and where you currently are, which is a super exciting place in your business. Looking back, are you satisfied with the trajectory? Like, is there anything that you would have changed if you could go back in time to the day you left your dancing career and decided to open a studio in Germany and to now? Like with all that you've learned, is there anything you would go back and do differently?
Yes, there's one thing I would have changed. This is really funny that it's with you that I'm going to tell you this. I was in my first studio space and a good friend of mine who works at a big sporting company, let's say he's a strategist for a sporting company. And he was training with me and he said, "Hey, have you thought about doing virtual stuff?" And this was in 2015. Mm. And I was like, no one would do that. Like, and he was really like, "I really think you need to think about this. People need to see what you're doing." And I shot it down. I just said, "I don't think that they do." That was before I started taking before that turn of events of me taking myself seriously as an entrepreneur. So I do wish that I had leaned into that advice. And yeah, it's the one thing.
Well, that's helpful to hear. And it's also exciting that you have a friend that saw the potential for that back in 2015, because most people in our industry certainly did not. So that's a smart, futuristic thinker. I mean, I think you certainly leaned into it when you realized that it was a path forward. So I would give yourself a lot of grace for that. But it's great to hear that. Like I wish I had started a true crime YouTube channel in 2016, because I would be the biggest YouTuber on the internet right now if that had happened. So yeah, I mean, it's helpful to look back and see kind of like what exploded in retrospect. Okay. So what's next for the two of you? So obviously you're looking at different routes of expansion. Do you see yourselves creating any more kind of online offerings or just focusing and leaning in on the two kind of primary offerings that you already have?
We have plans for, we have plans for several different online offerings. Probably the next big one will be our bar teacher training, because as former professional dancers and our mix of Pilates, that's where I think that we could also really excel at. And exploring the avenue of creative Pilates and expanding that to our people. So yes, those two different areas that will be heavily focused in the teacher training area though.
Nice. And do you travel a lot within your career? Do you go do a lot of public speaking? Do you do a lot of kind of retreat experiences?
We did a little bit more in the past. We've been asked to go places, but at this point, I've been so focused on what we're currently doing that I've turned down most everything. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that I'm not open for it in the future. I think I'm now at a place where I'd be able to create a little bit more space for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's helpful for folks to hear. I mean, part of what stands out to me about your business is your kind of laser focus on your objectives, right? And your ability to let other opportunities go, which we've discussed over the years. And I think that that's a really important thing to point out, because I think very, very early on in one's career or business, it's like, it's really helpful to say yes to everything. But as you grow, it becomes more important to say no, or to really focus on your core deliverables. Like, what are you really trying to achieve? And I see your business as doing that really well. So I think that's something to point out. And obviously, if someone's like great passion in life is leading retreats, then by all means, one should lead into that, right? Like, that's what you should follow that. But if I think as you start to get more and more success as an entrepreneur, you're just going to get more opportunities. So knowing when to say no is as important as knowing when to say yes.
Yeah. And then also with each one of those little things, like say it's leading retreats or whatever it is, that there's also that learning curve. You have to be ready to put in the time to learn how to do it really well and not jump from one thing to the other.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Okay. Well, so this has been super helpful, Hannah. I just want to leave you with a question to end this conversation, which is, what do you see trending? And I know we just talked about not following trends, but like, what do you see kind of trending in the industry? And what, if any, of those trends do you intend to lean into in 2024?
Well, I think with the rise of AI, we have to be learning it now. Because I think it's going to be going so fast that if we don't get into that right now, then it's going to be very hard to catch up a little bit later. So I think for me, it's about learning AI, learning what the capacities are in a way that increases my productivity, but doesn't take away from my authenticity. So I'm not going to be a person that's going to lean in and have it write a blog for me, because I don't think that is not truly who I am. I'm sure that they're not going to get that right. But if it can take some of my tasks off of my desk so I could do the things that I'm really good at, then that's where I need to learn AI better. So that's probably my big trend alert.
That's cool. Yeah. Have you been using it in any capacity so far in your business?
Playing around, seeing what does it sound like? What is it? How close can it replicate my voice? Not speaking voice, but just the way that I like to do things and problem solve. AI in the sense of like, where can you automate tasks? You know, like even on Instagram with ManyChat, put this keyword in and then you have it bouncing straight to your email list. I mean, that's really great. For many, many years, we were literally going every single person and writing them. That's thousands of people in our in our DMs. And we're always behind it. But if we could automate that first point of contact, if they're looking for one of our opt-ins, then heck yeah, let's do that. And then I can follow up on the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's smart. Yeah. You're the second person in this series of interviews that I've been doing that mentioned actually ManyChat and the usefulness of ManyChat. So I think that's a great tool to call out for folks using Instagram as a growth metric for their business or as a growth tool.
Do you want another tool?
Yeah. I would love to hear another tool.
Another one that we've been playing around with, say, a good 7-8 months, is we use Metricool. Oh. Metricool is like so it's a platform where you can hook up all your social media places in, and you could schedule out things and also see how you're doing in the long, like what sort of engagement is you're getting on there as opposed to other people that might be in your field.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
So it's showing you like how you rank.
So you can... Kind of crazy. So I think this is a secret tip from social media managers. I don't think that people are using it the way that we're currently using it.
Yeah.
But like if we're going on vacation, and I know that Chris is going to be, he's going to be posting every single day, which means that would be too much time away from our vacation. So what we'll do is schedule everything out for those 2 or 3 weeks. And you could then go in there and take a look at how things are doing, but you could also put different profiles that are in the similar range as you are. And so that you could look and see what what's going really well on that person's account, not to take their ideas, but just to understand how things are trending. Mm-hmm. So that's really super interesting. Mm-hmm.
So you don't need then any other social media scheduling tool. This like essentially is the tool you need.
Between those two things, that's all we do. So we know when things are going out. So we will say use ManyChat with a certain keyword, and then we set it up to be active on the post that we want it to go out on. And then it does it all by itself.
Wow. And do you have help with this, or are you two doing this on your own?
We're doing it all on our own, which is, we need more sleep and we need an office manager if anyone wants to apply.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So do you have any full-time, you don't have any full-time people at all other than, I imagine, teachers in your studio? You have teachers.
We do have teachers, but they're not yet full-time. We are teaching everything right now. And then we're adding a couple more teachers on there. So we have a team. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That is a lot of responsibility. And I think it's really, really great as you're building your business to do everything and learn everything. And then you know when it's time to offload some of those tasks. So I think that's an exciting time.
It's time.
Yeah. I think you know it when it happens. And so that's fantastic. So that is also, it sounds like, going to be part of your 2024 experience.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild. Well, it's just, that's such a good problem to have, Hannah. And thank you so much for your time. I'm so proud of you, Christian, watching, you know, what you've created and how you've grown and how you've kind of like taken a stand. Just your work, your business is opinionated. And I think that that's also, it's really a beautiful thing to see. And I just have so much respect for you. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat and share your story and share your strategy and tips with our audience. I know that folks are going to learn a lot.
Thank you so much for you guys and all you do for lifting up all of our voices and making all of this possible, you know, and making really a place where our voices can be heard and the coaching that can support dreams like this possible.
Well, you are so welcome. And we will, of course, include all of the links to you and your business in the show notes of this episode, including links to your fabulous Instagram account so folks can go and give you a follow. Thanks again, Hannah.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Marvelous. Marvelous helps you build and sell your own courses, coaching programs, memberships, and digital products. Go from idea to open for business in just minutes. If you're looking for a simple, beautiful, custom branded platform to build and grow your online business, you can learn more at heymarvelous.com.